This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Embracing Change. We're so glad you have joined us. We are continuing our season called From Mess to Message, and this is episode 4, and we are very, very, very happy to welcome our guest today, Raquel Weaver, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Gladly, gladly. So, Raquel, tell me a little bit about who you are and where you're from, a little bit of your history.
Who am I? I am a... It's a great question. I'm a father. Child of God. I'm a child of God. I'm a father. Where am I from? From Cincinnati. I've been here all my life except when I went to school in Valparaiso, Indiana. Other than that, that's the gist of answering your question.
But when she asked you who you were and where you come from, I noticed that you hesitated and said, that's a good question. Do you believe that the reason your hesitation is because evolving to find out who we are from the mess to the message is really a very, you know, kind of space, unknown space?
When she asked that question, it's like, who am I? It's like, from what stage in my life are you speaking from? You know, I have many stages in my life, and, you know, the one I would like to talk about is the one that I'm in now, which is like the most pressing. Well, I'm a child of God, most definitely. But the most pressing issue in my life right now is me being a father. You know, that's one of the hardest things I can really say that's put a lot of demand on me right now. Is, you know, the interaction between me and my four children, being a single parent, it's very, you know, very demanding. Like I was telling you earlier, you know, it was the interaction, you know, we was having on the phone. You know, I'm like, I'm learning this. You know, I'm making a lot of mistakes, but I'm learning. So that's why, you know, okay. I feel like, you know, once this season is over, what I can reflect, I'm like, yeah, you know, what's next? What's next for me after this stage of my life? I'm just waiting for that time.
So when you say that a lot of times when we talk about the mess to the message, we have to talk about all the stages, though, because the message comes from the stages of the mess. And then you said, I've made a lot of mistakes. And one of the things about fatherhood, before I can become a father, I would think I have to become a man.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, yes. You know, and I guess that's where, you know, because you didn't just wake up today being a father, but you woke up years ago being a male child. And so I would like to know for you, because there is no manuscript for parenting and fatherhood, for you, since that is the most present moment of your life right now, is fatherhood.
Yeah.
Being a man that is a father that is single. Would ask then, how was fatherhood presented to you in your life?
How was it modeled?
Well, I knew my father all my life. He wasn't a father to me. He was my mother's boyfriend. And I mean, it's like, you know, truth be close. They, you know, I was conceived, both my parents were married, just not to each other. Mm. And so he was around. He was around for her, and I was there. That's how I visualize it. I mean, the last thing he said to me was, happy birthday. And 45 days later, he died. Ooh. My 21st birthday.
Wow.
So just understand, like, you know, my example of a father is not from him. I played sports from the age of 5 till I was 21.
Okay.
And the coaches, I mean, I really, as I look back, I played sports so that I can be around a male figure, a father figure, a man. And so a lot of my character comes from my interaction with my coaches. And as far as, like, me being a father, it was, you know, when I was never, you know, when I got the news that I'm about to be a father, I never shied away from it. It was just, I didn't know what to do. And so I'm following the standards, which is where I made all the mistakes at. And as I learned to let go, try to control everything and just deal with situations as they occur, it became easier and easier. But right now I'm in this season where I got teenagers and it's like, oh goodness.
We need to pray for you, basically, right? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember being a teenager yourself?
Yeah, and I'm sorry. Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yes, and then go ahead.
Well, you know, because see, it was. I'm trying to tell my children. I'm like, look, you know, you guys are just hard headed. You know, if my mother told me to clean my room, I just clean my room.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the difficulty? You know, if do dishes, just do the dishes. You don't like it, you do the, but you just do the dishes. And they try their hardest to talk to my mom, like, Granny, give me some of the dirt on Dad. And it was like, she was like, there is none. You know, whatever I told him to do, he did it. You know, only thing that she could say about me is that I was a loner. I had no problem going for a walk. I have no problem being by myself. And, you know, so.
So what you're dealing with really is cross-generational postures. And when I say that, meaning you came up by, your mom is, if you don't, how old are you?
43.
You're 43. And so you look at 43 years from the day you were born to now, that's how many generations? Do you know how many generations that is?
One, right? One generation? Two?
I think it's more than that.
It depends on how you define. Yeah.
So some people say it could be three, depending on, you know, how they define the generation. Because some people say it's 10 years.
I've heard 20.
You know, 20.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's definitely two generations, mm-hmm. you know, that you're now the father two generations, you know, back. So then if your mother, like I'm 60, so that's three generations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so we were told certain things in our generation to respond to. Children were seen more than heard.
Yeah.
In this generation, we have said to children, we hear you, we see you. So they say, then I take up that space and I challenge you.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, I yes, and yes.
And I think it becomes the parents' responsibility to define how they are seen and heard, but never shutting them down, because the more that they talk, the more opportunity you have to teach.
Yes. The only problem that we have coming up is I'm teaching from two generations ago, and they will see that. They see, like I said, if you told me to do something, I just do it. Clean your room.
And they see I'll clean it, but at my pace and at my time. And I'm not saying I'm not going to do it. I'm just not doing it right now.
Or I'm not going to do it the way you want me to
do it. Exactly. Or those kind of things. And so how do you think we close up the mess and the message with the generational gap?
Well, for me, one of the things that I've learned is that I need to stop. I need to stop thinking that my way works.
Come on.
And just learn them. You know, one of the things I've learned about being a man is that I have the ability to take on stuff. You know, I got the ability, you know, you angry. If you angry, be angry at me. I can take it. I'm your father. Whatever anger you have, I can take it. I felt like that's what God instilled in me, the grit to take whatever it is that my children have to offer. Because at the end, when you all tired, I still love you. And I feel like that has helped out a lot with dealing with my children. But they're coming from so many different directions. I'm like, hold on, I need a break.
Yeah. Come on, be honest. Yeah.
I'm like, because, you know, it's I'm taking on a lot and you know, like I'm taking it on, but I can give it to the Lord. Mm-hmm. And that's in this season of my life, I'm learning that. But it's just like, I'm like, they coming at me from all these directions. If it was just like one direction, we'd be fine. But then again, I realized then what type of growth can I learn if it's something that I can manage. So I'm learning.
So it's like you're learning to pivot.
Yeah.
It's like you said you play sports. What kind of sports did you play?
Football, wrestling, baseball.
Okay. So with all three of those sports activities, we know that you were looking to be nurtured and loved and guided by a male.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you learned disciplines.
Yeah.
So in I'm going to go in football, you had to learn, what position did you play in football?
Offensive line or defensive line.
Okay. So that meant that you had to pivot in each one of them. You had to, it's like living in with two brains. You know, like we have one brain but two sides.
Yeah.
So you had to live with living on both sides of your brain when it came to that activity.
Okay.
So when you look at your children, maybe using that same skill that you learned in your sports activity, whether you were playing baseball, whether you were playing football, or whether you were wrestling. Because, again, we know biblically we do not wrestle with flesh and blood.
That's correct.
But principalities in high places.
Mm-hmm.
So when I hear you say, I'm really struggling with finding the message sometimes in the mess of my children coming at me in different directions, I would then ask you to consider that, how do you pivot with each one of them individual? One day I saw you and you said, I'm learning to spend individual time. So using the sport analogies of whether it's baseball or whether it's football or whether it's wrestling, when you had to pivot in those activities, what did you do? Or what did, you know, what was your perspective? What did you?
Well, I'm going to change some of the wording around.
Okay, good.
It's whenever I was in a position where I had to and I didn't know how to, I just listened to my coach.
Okay.
And I took his guidance.
Okay.
And
that's good.
Now, good or bad, sometimes it wasn't good, sometimes it was bad, but it was the fact that I was willing to listen. And
so let's stop right there. All right. Notice what you just said. I was willing to listen, but I have children that do not like to hear me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the angle right there. You know, that's it. It's like, how do you deal with wayward children? I mean, that's like, okay, if you're not listening to me, let me listen to you so I can speak your language. Not that I'm gonna, I mean, I might change, I might grow, but at the same time, it's, I'm not gonna, I'm still father, I'm still dad.
Right.
You know, it's not, I'm not.
So the responsibility and accountability goes to you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I had an issue. My daughter had an issue that really shook her up yesterday. And I was like, what you went through yesterday was one of the things that scares me as a father to a teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was in a situation, I'll be brief about it, where she was like, Dad, I'm ready to go home. And I'm like, well, catch the bus. And the minute she said, I'm over some boy house, I'm on my way. You know, it just changed, like, why are you calling me? You got bus fare. Then when she was over at boy house, all right, I'm on my way. You know, just changed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it bothered her. And it was, you know,
like, which that bothered her, that you told her to ride the bus?
No, it bothered her that somebody put her in that situation.
Situation, okay, with the boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was alone with a boy and she felt uncomfortable. So okay. She called me and I was like, I'm, you know, we arguing, but that was the best time to call me, when you feel uncomfortable.
Or yeah. Right, that shows how much she trusts and believes in you, and she knows that you're safety.
And that so you hear her. You. Yeah. And that you hear her.
And that's awesome.
And you see her.
Yeah.
And this is us as women who have been little girls, that also says something about you, Raquel, about the fact that you went looking for coaches in sports. They come looking for you. Sometimes it's not what's happening, that we get so caught up into the activity of what they're not doing that we can't see what they are doing.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
She was in a very moment that she needed her father.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately she didn't call anyone else. She didn't even succumb to peer pressure. She called her dad.
Yep.
Because she knew, one, her dad would hear her, her dad would protect her, mm-hmm. her dad would rescue her, her yeah. dad would come after her.
Yeah.
And all she had to say to you was, I'm at a boy's house.
That's all she had to say.
And like you said, you and her were at odds at some level. She did not allow her emotional odds with you to define that she was in a crisis that she did not feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
That tells you the fatherhood and the relationship you have.
Okay. I can see that. You know, especially and, the conversation. I mean, but it did open up. It opened up dialogue between us.
Yeah.
Two. So, you know. Yeah, I can see that.
So, as a dad, what really anchors you? Like when you're dealing with all the different situations, because you got a lot of dynamics going on with your kids,
mm-hmm.
blood, not blood, and having been there. I mean, before the show, we were talking about that, being a step-parent and how that can be challenging. But what anchors you as you're processing some of these issues and being a single dad and wrestling through, like, everything depends on you and what have you?
Well, you know, one of the things that I can say this. I can say, like, I hated my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wasn't a father. He was a father to his daughters, but he wasn't a father to me. So that really bothered me as a child.
Mm.
And I just told myself that I would never be that type of father. And I think I made a promise, an oath to God. Like, I don't ever want to be that person. And I feel like the situation that I'm in now is, you know, God telling me, like, all right, I'm going to put you in a situation where
come on,
I'm going to give you children. And you said you didn't want to be that father, so here you go. And so I just feel like I'm under submission to love these children the best way I know how. I realize I don't have all the answers. I realize I'm not the mother. I can be a nurturer, but I might not be the nurturer for you, you know, but I can be the protector. And, you know, one of the things
And the provider,
yeah. You know, I don't, you know, that's one of the things that I feel like I'd have to disconnect with it, the nurturing part. I try to, but it's like my character is so nonchalant. My character is so, I don't care. I mean, the emotional aspect, they can honestly tell you I have no emotions. It's either right or wrong, left or right, up and down. That's it. And, but I'm learning. I'm learning.
And how much of that is just being male? I mean,
well,
you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, you know, I'm saying, like, I'm not mother and father. I'm just dad. So,
right.
You know, that whole nurturing hug. I mean, I hug my kids. It's just, you know, that nurturing aspect that a woman can provide. I don't have it. I can fake it. But, you know, they know when it's authentic me. And, you know, all right, dad. You know, like, for example, last week we watched that show with all the singing.
Either American Idol or...
No, it was a cartoon show. It was a cartoon show. And they get special gifts and whatnot. And
is it from Disney?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm,
is it Is it the mask? What is it? No, not... I think I know what you're talking... It's the newest one with all the... not Italian, but Spanish.
Yeah.
It's Don't Mess With
Bruno
or something.
Don't Mess With Bruno.
Yeah, that
I've
show.
Heard that, yeah.
Well, notice it, that show.
That show.
And my daughter was like, all right, Dad, it's been 2 hours. I know you bored. You can go to sleep now. All right, cool.
But you took the time to watch it with her.
I took the time to watch it. You know,
right.
Made the popcorn.
That's right.
Got all the little jujus and the Mike and Ikes and, you know, and they ate all that. But, you know, it was me spending time with them. And I told him,
that's important.
I know that now. You know, yeah. And I know that, you know, before it was not wanting to work. That's when I was had my own business. And I just, you know, that didn't work out. And I just felt like that was divine intervention on that one, because it taught me, like, just to, you know, settle down. Like, you know, quit thinking that you running something. You ain't running nothing. I just said, okay. You know, now we're going to see the gospel mission. And like, I don't make nearly as what I'm making as I was doing as my janitorial, but I got peace. And I think that's more important right now in my life.
And you got, it seems like you also got stability.
Yeah.
And consistency, and you know how to plan your life. As an entrepreneur, I know that you have to give all you have, as because you are the sole winner of making sure it's successful.
Yep. You have to be the HR, the supervisor, the person who takes all the complaints.
And that's what you've been as a father.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
You're the entrepreneur as the father. You are the one who is the HR, we call human resources, but you are the one now, you know what I'm saying, as a human resource to make sure your children have what they need as humans.
Yeah.
You are the person who is the supervisor to make sure that they're accountable to everything. So I think if we look at our lives and some of the things that we've experienced, it can be led in and bled into the role we have now. Mm-hmm. We talked about the beginning. You talked about the different stages. But I think when I look back at what I know of you, I look at all the experiences that you've been through, and all of them have got you to this moment, and God has not left you empty.
No, he has not.
It's all about looking at what he has given me and all my experiences, and how do I become that and utilize that for this moment.
Yeah, I definitely agree. That's why I was like, situation right now where I had a heart operation.
Yeah, let's...
I just realized, like, you know, this is the next stage of my life. One of the things you said, you was like, I'm glad you're not hiding it anymore. And it was like, yeah, I was hiding it. And I just feel like in this season of my life, I just feel like I need to be an example, and I'm explaining why. I ran into two people on the street, one person in the hospital, where the one lady who I met, when, you know, she found out what I had, she was like, my husband passed away because he didn't want that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she gave me a hug. I was like, wow, you know.
Wow.
And we know someone who passed away in our working world.
Yes.
Because they didn't want they didn't want the procedure you took.
Yeah.
So they chose to die instead.
Yeah. And
wow, that's heavy.
Gary, he needed the exact operation he got, and Gary said no.
Wow.
And when I went to, we have a group at the hospital, and I went there and
a support group.
Support group at the hospital, but it was awesome. I was the only one that showed up post procedure. Everybody else was pre procedure, so it was supposed to have been a half an hour, but I ended up being there 2.5 hours just answering questions. And, you know,
so now you were able to help the people who were getting ready to get the surgery.
Yeah.
Because you showed up because you already had the surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it just taught me, like, all right, don't hide it. You know, it's, you know, show, you know, the world. Yeah, show the message. Show us, like, it's not the end, you know. It's just the next stage in your life. And I just feel like, you know, for what I'm doing, it's called a bridge to a transplant. And, where I am, they did this, and I have to do some more things before I can get put on a heart transplant. And, you know, in my head, I was thinking, like, all right, get this. All I got to do is lose, like, 15 more pounds, and I can be put on a heart transplant, get a heart transplant, 2023, brand new me. And I'm like, I realize that ain't going to happen. I need to go through. There's still something that I need to do. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I'm just, you know, I'm at peace with, I might be having this thing for 5-6 years before that happens. And I'm at peace with that now.
So you're learning how to take even some of the messiness of becoming a candidate for a heart transplant and say, in between the actual procedure I've already had to the next one, I'm going to let God give me the message of a real heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the real heart is not the one that beats in my chest as much as it beats in my mind.
Yep.
And how I position and posture my mind before God in life, and how I'm going to internalize it to become the best version of me than I can ever be. So when the new heart comes, it's being entered into a new person, not just physically, but spiritually, emotionally, human resource-wise with my children, the superintendent of my children, the manager of my children, the manager of me, of you. You're learning how to supervise you, mm-hmm. come on, manage you, embrace you, because I am a soul believer is that I can't give you what I do not have.
Mm. Yes, I believe that too. I definitely believe that. I instill that in my children. Just like I said, I'm trying this nurturing thing, but you know, all right, Dad, you can go to sleep. All right, cool.
Because it's a room that you're not familiar with, but it sounds like God is also giving you an opportunity through your children to know that when He created male and female, He created them.
Yes.
And so He said He's the many-breasted one. That means that we have the ability to be the nurturer mm-hmm. when the time comes. It may not be the exact posture that I'm used to as a male, but it's the one that you can tap into. And the way we tap into those things is inviting God in mm-hmm. and saying, you know, we think that when we pray, we're giving God information. That's not the truth. He already has the information. When I pray or you pray, we're inviting Him into the situation, mm. not giving Him information.
Amen. Yeah.
And so often we think we're telling God where we are when He already know our location.
Yeah.
He said, I know your thoughts are far off. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. if He knows what I'm thinking before I even think it, I'm not giving Him information because I'm praying about a situation.
Yeah.
I'm inviting Him into the situation to guide me through it.
Yeah, I would word it as I'm submitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm relinquishing my supposedly power and allowing Him to run it. And I'm just, okay, what's next?
Exactly.
What's next? What do you need me to do next? Or what do you want me to do next? Sometimes you got to like, hey, where you at? Where you at?
And sometimes you find greatest in the waiting.
Yeah, I know.
In the stillness.
I know.
Of Him not responding because He believes that He's already given you what you need in order to create what's next in your life. And so sometimes we so quickly want to get out of the situation or we want the answer of the situation, even when we relinquish in power, which is pseudo power because we don't have any power.
That's right, we don't.
But the reality, of it is that when we believe that we are relinquishing that and it doesn't come as quick as we want, then we tend to look for Him or we come up with our own conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, it ends up being even sometimes worse than it was before.
Yes, yes. I definitely agree with that. I definitely do.
Yeah. So the other thing I want to tap in, I want to go back somewhere, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You said something when Jennifer asked you about your children, and you said, you know, because you do have two biological children that you're raising
mm-hmm.
and two children that may not be your blood, but they are your kin.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And so they are the children that you chose. So I'll say biological and chosen.
Okay.
And so something you said that you hated your dad, and so you made a self-proclamation of what you wouldn't be like.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also heard you say something in this time of speaking that there are times you're so frustrated and tired. My question to you is, have you ever revisited the emotional baggage from your dad, from the proclamation that you made for yourself?
Yes, I have. I've did that a long time ago. And you know, I said I hated my dad as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But as a man, I realized that was childish for me to say. I mean, I said it, so, you know, it's not like I can't say I didn't say it. I can't, you know, people heard me say it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can never be, you said, no, I know I said it. I said it. But as I became a man, as I became a father, I might not agree with what he did, but I understand. And it's not like, you know, we don't make the right decisions. But sometimes our decisions lead us in the wrong direction. And are we man enough, woman enough to pivot or change directions? I am. He wasn't. And, you know, I accept it. You know, I accept the fact that how he lived is he didn't, you know, he lived a life where his pride is what guided him. You know, he had three daughters that he put in his will, and he had me, which he didn't. the only person at his funeral who knew me was his younger brother. Nobody else knew I even existed. So it kind of hurt. Like, wow, you know. And it's like, when you look at me, I'm like, I look just like him, but he didn't acknowledge me. So it hurt, you know, fam. But if I was a secret to his family, and it's like, and that's how I look at it. I was a secret to his family. I was a secret to his mother. I was a secret to his, I don't even know if it was an aunt or grandmother. I don't know, but, you know, the matriarchs of his family. Like, well, why would you do that? And, you know, as I'm living life and I'm realizing some people make some of the dumbest decisions. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that.
No, some it's people, true. Go ahead. It's true. Some people make the dumbest decisions.
And don't want to repent from it.
Exactly.
And I'm learning, like, I need to repent as soon as I realize. As soon as I realize I made the wrong decision, just repent right then and there. That way, I have the freedom of changing. I really feel like, you know, our sinful nature is we know we're doing what's wrong, but we can't change it. Or we believe we can't change it because it changes who we are. And it's like, that's the whole purpose of salvation. It's like, okay, we're not perfect. So quit trying to live life like you're perfect. Make mistakes, you know. Admit that you're wrong. You know, I feel like I'm freer now because I made mistakes and I admit them. I feel like I can tolerate more because I have the ability to change.
Yeah.
I don't hide behind, you know, I said what I said and even though if it was wrong and I have to live by it. No, I said what I said and I was wrong, so now I can change. You know, I mean my issue with my children was like, you know, when I first had children, I just felt like all I had to do was work. Stressed me out, put me in a situation that I'm in. And I said, okay, I'm going to change. And, you know, here I am. So.
Can I go back to something that I think you tapped into? You may have glazed over it a little bit. And that was you, when we talked about your dad, you realized you made the statement that you hate him. You have made the position to realize that he made dumb mistakes. But I think the piece that really touched me about the mess of it, that his choices was a mess. The choice that he made, you said something in the beginning of the interview that your mother and he both were married to two different people. So this sounds like they were having a situation, as they would call it today. You know what I mean? And that situation brought on a gift, which is you.
Mm-hmm.
But you were not acknowledged as the gift.
Yes.
That it seemed as though he made a decision. And then that choice that he made, a beautiful moment came out of it, but instead of celebrating it, it became hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to live behind the shadow of his choice and live behind the things. Does that make sense? That mm-hmm. he did. And then it sounds like with your mom, because she was, you know, one thing about women, they are left with the children, even in the decisions that they make. And so it sounds like your mom, when you going back to, again, I'm going to always connect it back to your own statement.
Okay.
And connecting it back to, I was used to, if my mom told me to wash the dishes, to, you know, whatever she asked me to do, I did it without, you know, residual conversations or not doing it or not trying to please her. It sounds like somewhere you took on the role of possibly connecting some of the shame and guilt and covering your mom to make her life a little easier.
Yeah. 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 She went through a lot too. I mean, she was married, but her husband was strung out on drugs, and that's why she left him. And she left him with three children. And, you know, spiraling down, and I became, you know, that's how I got here. And like I said, my father was always around. It was just, he was never a father to me. It was like,
he wasn't committed to the relationship
with
the
me,
family
with me.
Okay.
Well, my mother, yes, but with me, no.
Okay.
So
You know, that just the whole time you've been talking about like the relationship with your dad, the relationship with your kids, and how you're both mom and dad, the difference is the effort. I think you're successful because you've put in the effort. Whether or not you feel like you're successful, like watching TV with your daughter, the fact that you made the effort to watch TV with your daughter is a success. And that's a really big thing. And maybe not seeing that effort from your dad helped you always put in the effort with your kids, which is awesome. So
thank you.
It's really about being there. Like I would respect and honor anybody that tried. You know what I mean? It where it gets hard is when someone doesn't try and they don't put in the effort. Then it's like, it's really hard to reconcile those two things, those two positions. You know what I mean? So
I understand. Yeah.
And the fact that you also took on two children that was not your blood because you didn't want them to have the void of not having a father.
Yeah, you put in the effort there.
You put
too.
In the effort. You said, you know, it doesn't matter that they did not come from bone of my bone or flesh of my flesh. They came from the heart of my life.
Yeah.
And I am going to father them because I know what it's like to not have a father. But, you know, not only not have a father, I know what it's like to not have a father present to acknowledge you.
Mm-hmm.
See, so even your acknowledging them was another effort that I'm going to take on this as something that wasn't done for me. My father was connected to my mother, but he wasn't connected to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
These two children that are your kin by your choice, I call them your chosen children, you did the same for them as you did for your blood children.
Yes.
You laid down your life for them.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, I don't know what we define success as much as we should define it as I'm willing to show up.
Put in the effort, for sure.
I would agree with that, yeah, most definitely. You know, it's sometimes, well, as I reflect on a lot of things that, when I was in the hospital, I reflect on a lot of things that I've done, and I was just, you know, I do realize I'm a work in progress, and that, you know, I have accomplished some things in my life, even though they're not things that I would say are accomplishments, you know, from the world perspective, but they are accomplishments, and I need to give myself a break.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm learning to do in my life. Like, give myself, don't try to push yourself so hard, because you have conquered some giants in your life. So, you know, and to relax, you know, don't try to take on more than you can handle. And sometimes, you know, like I said, with my children, I'm like, you know, they're coming at me from all different angles. How do you handle that? And like I said, you know, right now he's quiet. It's like, okay, I get it. He's quiet. I can do it. You know, that's where I learned, like, I can take whatever they can give me as long as I just give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay. I'm fine, you know.
Hmm. I'm fine. And y'all are all in it together.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes.
It's four children and you.
Yes.
Are y'all all in it together?
Yeah.
And then your mom is present as well at times, right?
You know, yeah. She is. It's her, and from our conversation that we have, she was like, this is what you chose. I'm just going to sit back and give you my motherly advice. But, you know, as far as my presence, I'm not there. But I will be an advisor to you. Okay, you know. I mean, because one of the things that I realize is, you know, as we know what I make, and I'm like, what I make taking care of four children, it's like impossible, but I'm making it work.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's a success too, because it's, you know, that's by the world standard, like, that's impossible, but, you know, I'm doing it. I'm not struggling. I'm not stressing out over it. I'm not stressed, you know what I'm saying? And moving forward. I mean, that's, to me, success. And, you know, I was talking to my oldest son today. I'm sorry, this weekend, and he was telling me, he was like, Dad, because he's working now too,
okay.
And
He's the one you're helping find, teaching him what it is to be financially able to be mature.
Yeah.
That's another pivot.
Yeah, that's a whole. That is a whole other subject. But he was like, "Dad, how do you do it?" I was like, "What do you mean?" You know, because he got a job right now and he making more than I am. And he was like, "Dad, you know, like I make more than you, and I'm always broke." And I was like, "You know, that's because, you know."
He makes more than you an hour. He makes more than you for a year.
An hour.
Okay, gotcha.
And he makes more than me on the hour. He makes more than me on the hour. And he was like,
"So then you really make more than him if you work more hours than he do."
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. So I just want us to be clear on that, because sometimes people hear me though. They will hear this, and I want us to be very clear, because sometimes we measure by the hour versus the longevity.
Yeah.
And the experience. You have so much more to give. Like you said, the experience and everything, and even if he makes more than an hourly rate than you, he doesn't work more hours than you, and he doesn't make as much money as you. And so you've learned how to take the little you have and be a good steward over it. He's taken the less he got or the more he got, and he's already...
blew it.
Yeah.
He was like... How do you do it? I was like, you know, I know how to manage money, and I'm trying to show you, but you don't want to listen.
Come on, another opportunity to pivot. Go ahead.
Well, you know, like, you know, and I could strong arm
him. The effort, you making the effort.
Yeah,
that's right.
I can strong arm him into doing what I want him to do, but I was like, you know what? When you realize there's a better way, as long as I'm alive, I help you. But until then, like, you know, I had to pay $30 him to go to work today, and I was like, all right, you know, whatever. So, you know, because I'm broke, Dad. I was like, okay, you broke and I'm not.
And you make more hour than I do.
Yeah, you make more than I do. Yes, I emphasize that all the time, because he emphasizes it all the time. So, but yeah, it is. I mean, you know, It's a ride. It's a journey. Yeah. I mean, and having this conversation, it is a journey. And you know,
realizing how far you've come, it goes back to you saying that God is quiet, but he's not. He's asked you to celebrate the milestones and the accomplishments you've made. And I think us inviting you on this show, on our Embrace and Change podcast, is letting you see the journey and how far I've come.
Yeah.
Even in my thinking and my emotions and my relationship to myself, yourself, and to your children, how much effort and showing up that you've done, even with the disappointment of your own father.
Yeah. Hmm. That's good.
Okay. Yeah. I try not to think on him.
So he's still teaching you lessons.
Yeah.
In a matter of speaking,
yeah. He's really showing up.
No, I agree. I'm humbled. I'm grateful. And, you know, any opportunity I can get to where I do see his presence, I'm definitely willing to.
God's presence?
Yes.
And see, I'm saying God and your father's.
Okay.
And let me give you my spin on it. You said something again earlier about learning how to, you know, the different stages of your life and where you are. And right now, when you was asked the question in the beginning, and you said, I'm a son of God, and then I'm a father. Well, I think that our parents teach us who we don't want to become. So even in their death and their lack of presence, they are constantly speaking. And so they are still a teacher. Even in their ignorance, they are still a teacher. And so your father is a teacher right now, even in his absence and even in his ignorance, because our parents do the best they can with what they have.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people don't want to believe that, but you do the best you have. You do the best you can with what you have. Until you know better, you cannot do better. And so the more you learn, the more you are open, the more you gravitate toward experience and opportunity, you are learning what you do not always know. And once you know it, you are able to apply it, even in your children's life. Your son is saying, how do you do it? Well, I'm doing it this way. My daughter calls me because she's in an awkward position. Most of your life, Raquel, as you were growing up, you were in an awkward position.
Yeah.
And so your daughter is calling her daddy, and her daddy is showing up. Your father is still the teacher. He is still the teacher. Your heavenly father and your earthly father is still the teacher. And your heavenly father may be quiet because he's letting your earthly father, who gave you the genetic genes to create who you are, speak to your life. He's using that experience to bring you to a knowledge of how to be the best kind of father, first in him and then in you, because of what he wasn't able to give. Because our parents do the best they can with what they have.
I agree with that. Yeah, thank you. I never looked at it from that perspective.
Yeah.
And on that note, we will wrap it up. And thank you for sharing of your story and your time and being with us. It's been good.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, okay. I'm so glad you were here. You're such a wise man, Raquel. Such a wise man.
I appreciate that.
Amen. No, you are a wise man.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
More than I say that to you a lot, but I mean it. Okay. You are a wise man. Quiet. You said something too in this interview that I was good with being alone. Most people don't know how to sit with themselves.
Yeah.
Wisdom comes from sitting with yourself, Raquel. Hmm. You are a wise man.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts, and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by Lacreta Bowman.